Time for our Vents Day segment, your chance to vent your spleen politely on topics in the news. This week's topics, minimum wage and wilderness. 800-838-3760 is the phone number. jx@jeffnet.org is the email address. Raising the minimum wage is a hot topic in both states right now, more so in Oregon, where the legislature is moving toward votes on raising the wage. The state Senate is expected to vote tomorrow on a plan to raise the minimum in small steps between July of this year and July of 2022. And there would actually be three minimum wages if this piece of legislation passes: a middle-of-the-road minimum wage for more populated counties in western Oregon, a slightly higher one for the three Portland metro counties, and a slightly lower one for all the other counties. The difference, by the time all the steps have been taken, Eugene's and Medford's minimum wage would be $13.50 an hour. Grants Pass and Roseburg workers would get a buck less. Portland workers would get $1.25 more. If the legislature does not act, one or two proposals to raise the minimum wage could appear on the November ballot in Oregon. Emily Curitan's here in the studio with me with results and comments from another of our online surveys. Let's get your take. Do you think we should raise the minimum wage? How much? All at once or over time? Or conversely, why should we not raise the minimum wage? And what do you think of establishing a tiered minimum wage, the system where workers in or employers in Portland are required to pay workers more than employers in rural areas? 800-838-3760 to talk about the minimum wage on the Jefferson Exchange, or jx@jeffnet.org. Our other topic comes back to a discussion of expanding wilderness near Crater Lake on Monday. That's one example. We want to get your views of wilderness generally. First, let's hear from Monday's guests again. Here's Eric Fernandez of Oregon Wild to put it this way.
In Oregon, we have only protected 4% of the entire state as wilderness. And that's a pretty low number. And, you know, yesterday was the Super Bowl, and so I'm in a competitive mood. And we're behind all of our neighboring states.
Klamath County Commissioner Tom Malams took entirely the opposite view on wilderness.
I've been accused of saying 1 acre is too much. Accused. Yes, I have. I have said that before because we have enough wilderness area designation already in our area here in the state of Oregon.
All right, so that's the general sense. If you have specific places you think of might be worthy of wilderness designation, let's hear those. If you think of specific places that should be exempt, that shouldn't even be wilderness, should have never gotten that designation, let's hear that too. It's your turn. Does Oregon or California need any more wilderness? If yes, where would you like to see more? If not, what's your concern about wilderness? Wilderness and the minimum wage, the topics on this Vents Day. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And Emily, last I checked, yesterday afternoon, we were getting a fair number of responses to the survey about the minimum wage through Facebook and the website.
That's right, Jeff. We sure are. Most of them are from the Rogue Valley, I would say, although we have a smattering from across the listening area, folks in Gold Beach, even one from Portland here, a couple from Portland, Grants Pass, all weighing in on if they think we should raise the minimum wage. And if yes, how should we go about it? Should it be all at once, over time, or this idea that the state Senate is considering this week of raising the minimum wage incrementally over time and keeping wages in rural areas, I think it's a dollar below that base wage, and keeping it in Portland a dollar above that base wage. So basically, if you live in an expensive urban area, you're guaranteed to make a little bit more. Or if you're an employer, you have to pay a little bit more.
Yeah, I was looking at the figures because there is a tiered schedule. So every year, starting in July of next year, you'd start watching the base creep up. But it's interesting that we're talking three bases. This is in Senate Bill 1532. Senator Dembrow from the Portland area put this into place. But the idea then of different minimum wages, Governor Brown had talked about two different minimum wages in her proposal,
mm-hmm.
One for the Portland area, one for everybody else. This is a three-tiered one, which would be essentially a middle-of-the-road one, and then one higher one for the Portland area, and then a lower one for the non-urban counties. Steve in Eugene is the first call. Welcome to the Exchange on Vents Day.
Howdy. I have more of a question than a vent,
mm-hmm.
and that is, if the legislature somehow cobbles together a minimum wage bill and passes it, and the petitioners manage to get enough signatures to float a ballot measure, is that ballot measure automatically negated, or does that take precedence?
That's an excellent question. I think what the legislators are doing is hoping that if they take action on minimum wage, there won't be ballot measures. But you raise an excellent question. And it seems to me that whatever becomes state law most recently would probably be the one that, takes effect.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that, Steve. Appreciate it. 800-838-3760 to join Vince Day by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Emily's got a pile of comments that came in through the survey we put online yesterday.
Yeah, bona fide Vince here. It's sort of refreshing to start Vince Day out with a question. So thanks for that, Steve. But a lot of folks who weighed in on our survey were enthusiastic yeses to the question, should we raise the minimum wage? We had a couple of people on the fence, and nobody said no. So if you're out there and you feel like raising the minimum wage is a terrible idea, please balance our program. Because, you know, a lot of folks, like, say, Joanne in Gold Beach said, yes, many jobs fill the town that require a college degree barely pay over $12 an hour to start. That is ridiculous. Most of these positions have slim to no opportunity for advancement or pay increase either. Considering the cost of living and the need or perceived need to keep younger families in our area, that's Gold Beach for Joanne, it's the only way to even remotely get people to stay here. So, and Joanne raised something that a lot of people in the survey raised, which is considering the cost of living and the difference between a living wage and a minimum wage.
Well, yeah, it's interesting, though, to look at the, I don't know, I can't escape the feeling that that some people might think, hey, are we chopped liver in parts of Oregon that aren't the Portland metro area when this first began to be discussed as a higher minimum wage for just the three Portland metro counties and a different one, a lower one for everybody else. Now that it's three tiers, we're talking, okay, so the base, the middle of the road wage would be in Jackson and Lane counties, for example. But then you've got Josephine, Douglas, Curry, Klamath, and pretty much everybody else, you know, bordering these other counties, not having the same wage. So just imagine if you're talking about when all is said and done, if you can make $13.50 minimum wage in Medford, but only $12.50 in Grants Pass, how does that make you feel?
It's going to have an effect, you might think, on these rural areas, especially considering the picture we see now may not be the picture economic growth-wise 15 years down the road. I mean, think about the vacancy rate in Medford. It's hovering between 1% and 2%, right? It's a growing area. I think we had some guests on the program not too long ago to talk about the economic growth happening in the Rogue Valley. So that is an excellent question. How does this plan take into account the fluidity of people moving around the state and different regions developing?
All right, so let's take some more calls. We have Grumpy John and Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to Vince Day to talk about the minimum wage and or wilderness.
Thanks, Jeffrey. As far as the wage goes, I would like to remind folks that when Henry Ford started paying his factory workers a ridiculous wage, he said, I want my workers to be able to afford my car. That is the essence of treating the people right rather than exploitation, and you are going to have a community. As far as the wilderness goes, I have a simple rule. If it creates clean, abundant water, then you're on the right track. If you are out rapaciously treating the forest like you have a giant lawnmower and you selectively take the best and most profitable logs, you are not sustaining forest management, you're not sustaining your trees, you're not sustaining your fish habitat, you're not sustaining the tourist industry. So back off, greedheads. You had it in the 70s and you pillaged the place. Now it's time for responsible wilderness management.
All right.
No greedheads.
All right. Thanks for that, Grumpy John. Appreciate it. Let's move on to Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vince Day.
Well, you know, I hate it when I follow Grumpy John because he stole my thunder.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I tend to agree with him on the wilderness piece. Interesting thing I just found out the other day is the Koch brothers apparently do own Georgia Pacific.
Uh-huh.
Which is one of the major lumber companies that would be concerned about the land being tied up, that and the Weyerhaeuser family and people like that. You know, I grew up on the myth of sustainable yield forestry. My cousins were fallers for Medco. Medco did, in fact, have a more or less long-term sustainable yield forestry program with their own private lands going. And when Georgia Pacific stepped in, some people from Georgia stepped in.
It was the Valhi Corporation from Texas. I remember that. Yeah.
Right. Those folks, they recognized the timber as an undervalued asset. And they moved the mill from one shift a day at Medco to three shifts a day, and my cousins cut themselves out of a job within a decade. And now you'll see how much of Medco is still standing in Medford. Okay, I think that they have one small particle board plant still running there.
Right, which was the Medite plant. All the stuff that was Medco proper is gone. And in fact, that's where REI and the Trader Joe's are.
Absolutely. And the short answer from my perspective is, not only is Grumpy John spot on, but the people who say it creates, you know, it's a job creator and things along those lines, it is, as long as you have people who will, in fact, do things the right way. But we cannot trust people to do things the right way. That's why I've got the job that I've got, you know. So now, as to the minimum wage, I'm very concerned about equal protection under the law.
All right. Thanks for that, Paul. Appreciate it. The case he brings up, and I don't want to get too far afield here, but I remember because I was working across the desk from a reporter who was working on the Medco situation back in the 80s. And what happened was, when it was bought in a leveraged buyout, the amount of logging on the private lands tripled.
Mm.
So when he talks about bringing on three shifts, that's exactly right. And they cut themselves out of their jobs. But the focus of this Vents Day is minimum wage and wilderness. And we want to hear your thoughts on those subjects on this Vents Day. I'm Jeffrey Riley with Emily Curitan. Your number is 800-838-3760 to call to be part of this. And the email address is jx@jeffnet.org. What other kinds of plums did you get from the survey?
Oh, all kinds of plums here, Jeff. Let's go to someone who I think expressed an interesting idea or concern about this tiered system that the legislature is considering. They thought, 6 years incremental increases is too long to increase our minimum wage. And this is from Michelle in Talent. Michelle wrote, "I think that the tiered system is another subtle way to exclude people of color from getting the same raise as everyone else, especially farm workers who are overrepresented in the counties slated to receive the lowest raise under Governor Brown's current proposal. Business interests have been lobbying hard to explicitly exclude farm workers from the raise, and when that failed, they saw the rise of this tiered system that will disproportionately impact these populations. We as a state have to reject this."
Well, and as I look at the numbers here, let me get this flat out for where it would be when the minimum wage fully clicks in. After the first 6 years, it becomes adjusted to the consumer price index. But by June of 2022, when the final adjustments would be made, again, if this bill passes and the entire Oregon legislature goes along with it, here will be the difference in minimum wages. It'll be $13.50. As the middle of the road one. So that'll be Jackson County and Lane County, for example. For the Portland metro area, $14.75, so a dollar and a quarter more. For the non-urban counties, it'll be a buck less. I mean, a whole dollar less. And so then...
Anchored that way, right?
Well, yeah, and two and a quarter less than what people are making in the Portland area. So considerably less than the metro. I understand a lot of people moving to the metro area, vacancy rate very low, rents going very high. I read fairly often about the fact that that owners are tossing entire buildings of people out to renovate and then rent the place for like double what they were renting it for before. So,
Although that's happening in Medford too.
Exactly,
right?
Because the vacancy rates are low. In fact, the Grants Pass vacancy rate I saw recently is about 2.2% as well.
So, I mean, it's interesting. Michelle zoomed in on a specific population, farm workers that would be affected by this. We had another comment, this one also from the Rogue Valley, from Jeremy in Ashland. Jeremy wrote that Ashland needs it, the minimum wage increase, but these ideas would be best put to work if the raise in minimum wage is based on cost of living in the proposed raise location. I can rent a one-bedroom house in Grant County for less than $500 a month with all the utilities paid, and a two-bedroom for less than $600 a month. In these economically starved areas, raising the minimum wage so drastically would hurt the economy. Most people in Grant County are employed by small business owners, farmers, and the government. It is the small business owners and the farmers who will be most affected by the increased costs. So kind of the flip side of the coin tossed by Michelle and Talent there of, well, what are the effects of raising the wage in these rural areas where there's just less to go around?
You know, in fact, one of the things that hasn't been mentioned here is I noticed that in the first phase of minimum wage click-in, should this bill pass in the Oregon Senate, the non-urban counties would actually see a reduction in minimum wage because the current minimum wage is $9.75. It would click back to $9.50 for places like Grand County.
Oh, wow.
Should this legislation pass. So a drop in minimum wage, actually. Let's take some more calls here. We've got calls coming in on our other topic this morning, wilderness. This is Vents Day on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Derek and Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a brief comment on wilderness. If you would allow me, I'd make
sure.
A brief comment on the minimum wage, too, but it's up to you.
Go ahead.
You know, I'm an employer. I employ anywhere from 4 to 6 people for my paint and lobster business in the valley. And I pay above the minimum wage, but an effective minimum wage increase, what they're talking, would de facto push my employees to a higher raise because I refuse to pay the minimum wage. So I just wanted to make that point, and I am in favor of it. I support Bernie Sanders, and I would certainly support a minimum wage increase.
Okay.
On wilderness, I wanted to make the point that when I hunt general Cascade elk season, and I go in from the east side of Sky Lakes Wilderness, I regularly run into people coming in from the west side of Sky Lakes Wilderness. So we run into each other in the middle mm-hmm. of the wilderness out there. And so I am strongly in favor of carving out larger sections of area for wildlife and for recreation. In part so I can hunt out there. I think the bumper sticker sums it up well. Wilderness, a great place to hunt and fish.
Mm-hmm. So are you just big enough to make sure you're not running into people from the west side? Is that the issue?
Exactly. I mean, it's not like it's a postage stamp wilderness, but that's just the way it is in Oregon. You've got an over-the-counter elk season, and you run into people all the time out there. The same thing happens on the Rogue Umpqua Divide. So all these wilderness additions proposed by Oregon Wild would be great because they just make it harder to reach. And when you want to get away from society, whether you're hunting or just looking for solitude, what a great opportunity to get out there and take advantage of those. I mean, you know, you fly over the area and you don't look down and say, gosh, we need more roads and more access. I mean, just take a look down when you're flying. It's appalling what we've done to the landscape.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Derek. Appreciate that. This is Vents Day on the Jefferson Exchange, wilderness and minimum wage, the topics. Here's another call on wilderness from Joe in Ashland. Welcome to Vents Day.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to say that it's important to understand what the wilderness provides. Is it wildlife? Is it rain? Or is there the unknown? Could it be that it holds the thermal mass? Is there a temperature that these 70-year-old trees that we're taking out in the Ashland watershed en masse? Does it provide habitat for wilderness? Can we just go in there with barely any backing of national organizations that would protect the wildlife? And then we need to use science. And not just say that we use science.
All right, so you want to see a method that's a bit more rigorous than you think you've seen so far?
Yeah, with the Audubon Society and other organizations.
All right, thanks for that, Joe. Appreciate it. John and Vanita, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Good morning, Jeff.
Hi.
Yeah, you'll be hearing me say things I've said before here on similar shows, but you know, I work for the Forest Service. I'm a native Oregonian. I've lived here all my life. I'm backwoods wilderness hunter and all that. And when I worked for the Forest Service back in the 70s, you know, the technology for logging, it was incredible how it improved and how fast they could go in. And this is up in the Cascades. How fast they could go in and just flatten this virgin timber. When I say virgin timber, I mean primeval timber. It never had any help from no human being, other maybe an Indian's burning once in a while. And they just went in and flattened it. Just flattened it, and it was disgusting. And finally, they about cut it all out, and we don't have hardly, I don't know, 5% or something of it left. And one of my big things I always like to bring up is the term virgin timber, because it says what it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way, no how, anybody should cut down any of that, because there's an ecosystem there that goes away with it. Now, they got this devil staircase thing I'm sure you've heard of, and I haven't got to go in there and see this yet, but I understand there's newts or some kind of lizards and ferns and stuff that don't exist. You can't find it in the Coast Range because they've cut it all down.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, another thing that really irritates me, Vietnam was roaring back then, is the Congress and the government, they couldn't see fit to take a couple percent and get a trust to take care of the forest. You know, they just suck up every penny they can, and it disappears.
All right, so you're saying if the land has never been touched, it never should be touched, and that should be designated wilderness now.
Yeah, if you got 30 acres over here that's 300-foot-tall Doug firs, and I can show you, they still exist. Keep their greedy hands off of it. They've turned everything into a tree farm, and they haven't managed it very good either. I mean, some of this dense dog hair timber, they just have just neglected to thin and take care of. You know, you're talking about fire hazards. A lot of it, the huge majority of it isn't from the original primeval forest. It's from man not doing it right.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, John. Appreciate it. This is Vince Day on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about not just wilderness, but also minimum wage as Oregon's legislature moves toward a vote in the Senate probably tomorrow to create a new higher minimum wage, but in three tiers with different minimum wages for the three Portland metro counties, for some of the more populated counties in western Oregon, and then for non-urban counties, they'd be the lowest of the three tiers. Join us on the exchange with your thoughts, 800-838-3760 over the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Since you did mention, Emily, getting a lot of the survey results from the Rogue Valley, generally in favor, no particular issues with the tiered wage? I asked this again because...
Oh, particular issues, yes.
Oh, really? Okay.
Uh-huh. Generally in favor, you know, a lot of like, yes, raise the wage. And then when we asked, what do you think about this tiered system where rural areas, the base wage will be a dollar lower, once the incremental increases have concluded and it's truly tied to cost of living. So people were saying, yes, raise the wage. A lot of people said, yes, raise it right now. And about this tiered system, though, here's one from Alex in Grants Pass, who actually offered an alternative to consider. He said, instead of a tiered system, why not just fit the statewide preemption and allow local jurisdictions to adjust wages as needed locally? So he's saying, why not lift the statewide preemption, give local jurisdictions the power? Then he writes, cost of living may be higher in Portland than other parts of the state, but that shouldn't be used as a justification to avoid making sure rural workers get a dignified living wage.
So the state should set a floor, and then each local community could set whatever it deemed to be was its logical level there.
Right. And I could see a number of issues spinning off of that whenever you have, I think we're watching that happen now with marijuana different values being represented by elected officials at various local places than maybe what the state has now said.
It's really hard to keep a track of the patchwork there because each municipality, each county government is going to be a little different in what it wants to allow in
mm-hmm.
marijuana, even though recreational marijuana now legal in Oregon. But the other part that corresponds back to what I think we're seeing with the idea of the tiered minimum wage is the way the legislature said it's okay for counties that the majority voted against marijuana to go ahead and not have recreational pot sales within those counties. So you end up coming up with a system that's just started last year where we're now talking about continuing with the minimum wage where you can have conditions be very different from place to place across the state of Oregon.
Right, and that's not what the legislature is considering or what the governor has proposed, but that is what Alex in Grants Pass proposed on our survey, which you can find on jeffexchange.org or on our Facebook page. It's a great way to participate in Vents Day, kind of taking the back door in with your thoughts. And we did get quite a few responses. Another person, Catherine in Ashland, wrote, I think the minimum wage should be based on the cost of living in any given area, and there must be some way to determine this. There's actually quite a few ways to determine that. The living wage, it's called, is something that economists do work with. There's a new tool out actually from MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, called the Living Wage Calculator.
that's the Elmer Fudd version.
And that found that if you are an adult in, say, Jackson County, and this is about true for much of our listening area, if you're an adult, you need to make $10.85 an hour to meet your basic needs. If you're an adult with one child, you can go ahead and double that and add some change. So that is
double. Really.
Yeah, $22.50 an hour for an adult and a child to meet their basic needs in Jackson County.
Wow.
Yep.
That is truly significant. You mentioned the fact that so many people said about raising the minimum wage itself, a lot of yes, yes, yes kind of stuff. I did notice as the survey results were coming in yesterday about the tiered section, somebody just wrote down boo.
They did, yeah. We'll give a credit there to Ivan in Medford. Ivan wrote, raise it to 15 now, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. And then when we asked, what do you think about this tiered system the Senate's considering this week and the governor proposed, Ivan wrote, boo. So
there are definitely some opponents to the idea of raising the wage at all, too. I noticed a picture in the Statesman Journal of Debbie, who owns Nibley's Restaurant in Klamath Falls, been there a few times, and she was in tears in the arms of a Republican senator about the idea that what's going to happen to my business if I have to raise minimum wage. And we get a similar sentiment from Maureen and Eugene, who just sent an email. She says, I'm opposed to raising the minimum wage. It kills jobs and drives low-end employment under the table. I think you should allow the markets to set wages. If you think a store or company treats workers well, shop there or work there and support them. In Sweden, there are strong laws to protect the rights of labor unions to bargain wages collectively, and it prohibits anti-union discrimination. However, there is no minimum wage. Mm. So we've learned a lot. We learn a lot every time we put surveys out there. How many people altogether took part in the survey this time?
26 responses. And if you want to join the club here, find us on Facebook, Jefferson Exchange. Please like our page, and the survey will come up in your feed every week.
All right. It's something we're going to do with every Vents Day. We have been doing it for a couple of weeks now, and it's a great addition. Thanks, Emily.
You're welcome.
This is Vents Day. This is the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR.